Okay, well, welcome you guys. The title for the weekend for the teaching is The Spectrum of a Man's Life. Using the life of Joseph this weekend, we're going to look at how the Lord works in and through every aspect of our life to accomplish his good purposes, both for us and for others. What we see oftentimes as inconsequential happenings may be significant pieces in God's larger story for our life. If you notice kind of the graphics that we're using for this weekend, I've used test patterns both. There's kind of this multicolored test pattern that you've seen on color televisions back in the day. And then if you also notice on your songbook and on the badge stuff, you'll recognize that old test pattern from back in the day with the Indian chief head and all that stuff. And those all kind of beckon back for this whole thing. It refers to how our lives are really a series of tests. And we can often feel like the words that are scrolling across the screen of our life is, please stand by. And we'll see that in Joseph's life. And the thing about Joseph that we can learn is how he deals with his please stand by and the test patterns in his life. And he sets an amazing example for us that we can follow. Soren Kierkegaard said, life can only be understood backwards. However, it must be lived forwards. Life can only be understood backwards. However, it must be lived forwards. Think about that. We have to live life going forward. Its only direction that we can go is forward. Time marches on. But we can only really understand all that we've lived through by looking back on it. And that's when I see how that worked together with this. We don't see that going forward. It's always as we look back over the territory that we've already traveled. And that's the idea that Kierkegaard is getting across with that. Well, in this first session tonight, we're going to meet Joseph and learn a little about his background that sets the stage for the rest of his story. Joseph, he stands out as one of the most truly heroic characters in all of the Bible. And I would say one of the most truly heroic people that's ever lived, really. He had tremendous faith. He had enormous courage. He had a godly character. He was wise beyond his years. He was a great leader of people. He had a sensitive heart. And most importantly, God's hand was on him. God's hand was on his life. But he did not always have an easy life. He didn't live in a bubble, free from suffering and hardship. He faced some very difficult trials in his life, very difficult test patterns. He found himself hated and forsaken by his family and friends. He was betrayed by those that he loved. He was punished and imprisoned for crimes that he didn't commit. He faced temptations and tests of character that would crush most of us. There's an unstated expectation about life that many people share that goes something like this. If you are a good person, then you should be exempt from suffering. Bad things shouldn't happen to good people. Joseph was as good of a person as has ever lived on this planet, short of Jesus Christ. He wasn't perfect, but he was, by any sane person's standards, considered a very good person. And yet, he suffered. His life was filled with a great deal of suffering during an extended period of his life. None of us are exempt from suffering. And suffering, it isn't an indication by itself that God is with you or not, that God's happy with you or not, that God's using you or not. Bad things happen to both good people and bad people. The person who lives a life of faith sees their life as part of God's larger story rather than seeing their life as its own individual, isolated existence with its own self-contained, self-centered meaning and purpose. When we have a small, isolated view of life that doesn't reach beyond me. It's just about me and what's going on with me, what's happening to me. Then we're constantly being upset, aren't we, by stuff of life, because it isn't going my way. It's not fulfilling my purpose. The truth is, it isn't about me. It's not my way. It's not your way. I'm part of a larger story, God's story. And it's my privilege to be part of that story. When we get our attention off of ourself and onto Him and His bigger story, we begin to experience the full, joyful life that Jesus promised that we could have. Tragedy and suffering takes us in one of two directions. We either become bitter and resentful about life, we grow hard and callous, or we can let the suffering impact us in a positive way, growing the character traits of understanding and humility and compassion and patience. And this is how Joseph responds to suffering in his life. Joseph's perspective in life enabled him to live above his circumstances rather than letting his circumstances drag him down into depression and despair. Well, Joseph was the firstborn son of Jacob's wife, Rachel. Joseph's father, Jacob, had two wives, Rachel and Leah. Rachel was a very beautiful woman, and she grabbed Jacob's eye the minute he saw her. He fell for her immediately. He was in love with Rachel. He loved Rachel deeply. Leah, on the other hand, she supposedly wasn't so easy on the eyes. Her father, Laban, knowing he was going to have trouble getting a suitable husband for Leah, tricked Jacob into marrying both of his daughters, Rachel and Leah. Each sister also came along with a maidservant when they got married. So Jacob, he ended up with four women to bear children for him. But there was always only one of those four women that he really loved, and that was Rachel. Although Joseph was the firstborn son of Rachel, he was not the oldest son of Jacob. He was actually number 11 in age of 12 sons. Joseph had 10 older brothers. Six of these brothers were the sons of Leah. Two of them were the sons of Leah's handmaid, Zilpah. And two of them were the sons of Rachel's handmaid, Bilhah. Joseph's mother, Rachel, had Joseph first, and then she had a second child several years later named Benjamin. Sadly, she died while giving birth to Benjamin. The main part of Joseph's story begins in Genesis chapter 37. So if you have your Bible, let's flip over to Genesis chapter 37, where we find him at the age of 17, living with his father Jacob and 11 brothers in the land of Canaan. And I want to begin in verse 3 of Genesis 37. Now Israel, or Jacob is also referred to as Israel in Genesis. Now Israel, or Jacob, loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age and he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. It says, now Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. The special love that Jacob had for his wife Rachel has carried over to his firstborn son by her. This love was amplified even more because Jacob's wife Rachel died while giving birth to her second son Benjamin. So he loses his beloved wife, Rachel, and he pours all of that love and affection into his firstborn son, Joseph. It's just magnified and intensified. It says, Jacob made Joseph a robe of many colors. It was bad enough that Jacob favored Joseph over the other sons. But he basically puts a billboard on Joseph with this special robe that says, this is my favorite son. Now, there's been a lot of discussion among Bible scholars about the particulars of this robe. Some think it was a robe or coat made of many different colored threads or pieces of cloth. Some think it was a coat with decorative applique of some kind on it. Some think that it was a coat with long sleeves, which was what royalty would wear, rather than the sleeveless coats that the standard common worker person would wear. Bottom line, this special robe or coat set Joseph apart from his brothers as his father's special one, his favorite, his pet. Joseph was given special privileges and the best of everything. Adding Joseph's outstanding character and abilities together with his father's gross favoritism just created this wide gap between him and his brothers and this environment for a lot of resentment to grow toward him. See, do you remember the kid back in grade school who was smarter than everyone else? He was always following the rules. He always sat in the front row. He always was the first to raise his hand and offer an answer when the teacher asked for one. He would volunteer to stay in at recess to help the teacher with his work. You know, you remember those guys? The ones we hated because they made us look bad. That's Joseph. That's the kind of guy he was. He was a good kid. And his father loved him. And his brothers didn't. It says, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all the other brothers, they hated him. Look at the word that's used. It says they hated him. Do you know what that word translated from Hebrew into hate means? It means hate. They hated him. This is a family full of strife and division. Verse 5. Now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. So Joseph's dream suggested they're going to bow down to him. And they go, "We hated you before, but now we really hate you. You arrogant, little, you know, whatever." Verse 9, then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I've dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this saying in mind. So Joseph has this other dream, which suggests that even his father and mother are going to bow down to him. His brothers, as expected, they just hate him all the more. But his father Jacob, although he reproves Joseph for sharing the dream with all of them, it says he kept his saying in mind. In other words, his father ponders what it might mean. You see, Jacob himself had received revelations from God about his future through dreams too. So as uncomfortable as this dream by Joseph made Jacob feel, he had to consider the possibilities that it raised. I mean, perhaps Joseph would indeed rule over all of them one day. Perhaps God had some future plan for his son Joseph. He would keep these things in his heart and watch what the Lord would do. Sometimes things happen in our life that are very unexpected, unwanted, uncomfortable. But we need to try to stay open to the Lord during those times because he may very well be trying to tell us something. So just like Jacob here, he doesn't really like what this dream seems to imply. But God is speaking. And he needs to stay open to that. Now the question that comes to our mind at this point is, why does Joseph share these dreams with his family? I mean, why did he do that? Was he bragging or just exercising poor judgment? Is he just stupid? Bragging is not at all consistent with his character, so that's probably not what he was doing. He was not bragging. It appears that at this point in his life, Joseph is just a little naive and gullible. This next little story will suggest that even more. During those days, Joseph's 10 older brothers had been given or had been gone a considerable time shepherding the family's flocks a long distance away. And Jacob, he begins to worry about them. So he sends Joseph out to find them and report back if they're okay or not. Well, Joseph, he finally tracks his brothers down some 50 miles north of home. Verse 18. They saw him from afar. His brothers see him coming from a distance, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes that dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams." What are they planning to do with Joseph? To kill him and to throw him into a pit or a cistern. They hated Joseph so much, they're willing to murder him. Now, this pit that they're talking about, these are cisterns. They were these large holes in the ground that were either natural or man-made, that were either watertight naturally or made watertight, and they were used for storing water, and they usually narrowed at the top so you could put a lid on it. You know, it's under the ground, they slide a big flat stone over it or whatever to keep the water there. And this is a dry pit that they're talking about, throwing him into. It makes a great human-sized bug jar, basically, for keeping Joseph until they decide how they're going to get rid of him. Verse 21. But when Reuben heard it, this is one of the brothers, oldest brother, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father." So he's hoping that he can rescue him later. Reuben, he's the oldest of Jacob's sons, and as the oldest, he would be the one that's held mostly responsible for the well-being of all of the other brothers. If you're an older brother, you know how this played out when you were a kid. You're getting beat too, because you should have been looking out for your little brother, right? Now, another reason that Reuben may have been trying to protect Joseph was because he was already on the outs with his dad because of an affair that he had with one of his father's wives. Yeah. This is a kind of a messy family in lots of ways. His father's wife, Bilhah, Reuben had a thing with, and he got busted for it by his own dad. So Reuben may have seen this as an opportunity to get back into his father's good graces. If I rescue dad's favorite boy, maybe he'll forgive me for that little indiscretion I had with his wife. Finally, Reuben, you know, he may have just wanted to save Joseph from being killed because he's a decent guy and it's the right thing to do. Let's hope. Probably not. Verse 23. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers listened to him. Then Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up out of the pit, lifted him out, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. These are the compassion here is really overwhelming, isn't it? This is our brother. I mean, why kill him? Let's make some money on him, too, while we're getting rid of him. When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone, and I, where shall I go?" Reuben freaks out. When he goes back to the cistern and Joseph is gone, he's apparently not around when they sell him to these traders. The other brothers, though, they quickly come and they explain to him what they've done. Then they took Joseph's robe and they come up with this conspiring story about how they're going to conceal it. They say, "Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood, and they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, 'This we've found. Please identify whether it's your son's robe or not.' And he identified it and said, 'It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces.' Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, 'No, I shall go down to Sheol, to the grave, to my son mourning.' Thus his father wept for him." Jacob is brokenhearted, and he will not recover from the loss of his favorite son Joseph for many years. First, he's lost his wife that he loved, Rachel, and now he's lost the son that he loved. The grief is more than he can bear. He will refuse to move on with his life now. I mean, he will be stuck here, and we'll see that as we go through the story. And then finally, verse 36, last thing we're going to read tonight. It says, "Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard." So Joseph is sold as a slave to a man named Potiphar, an official for the Pharaoh of Egypt. So in closing, let's collect some ideas together here. It's exciting to know that God has a plan for us. Our life has a purpose. And it's doubly exciting when the Lord gives you a glimpse at some of his plan for you. That's what happened for Joseph. Remember, he was given this dream. But something horrible happened along the way to seeing that plan fulfilled. His brothers, they were going to kill him, but they decided to make a little money while getting rid of him, so they sell him as a slave to some merchants on their way to Egypt. The survival rate for slaves was not very good. They were pieces of property. They were often given the minimal care needed to keep them alive to work. The average slave in those days survived for about 5 years. So selling Joseph as a slave was a certain death sentence, just a very slow, painful death, rather than a quick, bloody death as they had originally planned. Well, how can this be God's plan for Joseph? It goes against the dream. Well, believe it or not, this was indeed fulfilling the plan that God had for both Joseph and the Israelite people. It'll be many years before anyone would see it, but this is fulfilling God's plan. And I hate to give away the end of the story, but many years from now, God's going to use Joseph to save millions of people from starvation, including his own family. And I want us to look at what Joseph says to his brothers many years later when they're all reunited again in Egypt. In Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, he says, "As for you," talking to his brothers, "you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." Do you ever feel like God's plan for you is not happening? Do you ever feel like the direction your life is going and the things happening to you in your life are far removed from God's plan for you? Do you ever feel like you've missed the plan of God for your life? I want to ask you a question, though. How do you know? How do you know? How do you know that what is happening in your life right now is not part of God's plan? How do you know that what has happened in your life up to this point has not been part of God's plan for you? See, it ain't over yet until it's over. It's not over. And you and I need to trust God with the big stuff and continue living for Him in the little stuff, the day-by-day stuff, the minute-by-minute stuff, until it's really over. I know it's hard to believe sometimes, but the Lord is working things out in your life. And maybe, just maybe, things are working out just the way they're supposed to. And God is using your life and the situations you're living through to do something wonderful. See, we're not always given supernatural deliverance from our problems, but we're promised supernatural use of them. Remember, Soren Kierkegaard said, life can only be understood backwards. However, it must be lived forwards. Someone said, those who turn back know only the ordeal, but they who persevere remember the adventure. Don't give up. Don't turn back. Don't quit. Keep moving forward. It's the only direction worth living.